At Giant Eagle, you may have spotted the Stacker. With uncanny MyPerks ability, she stacks up the perks to choose either dollars off or up to 20% off her entire grocery bill. The Stacker, stacking up huge savings with MyPerks. Find your MyPerksonality and transform your shopping into free gas and groceries. Full details at GiantEagle.com/MyPerks. Perks cannot be earned or redeemed on select items. Restrictions apply.
Welcome, folks, to the Sebastian Vettel Retirement Club Relief Podcast. Yeah, it's that kind of a day today. We're all that sad. Our hearts are completely full of sorrow, grief, but I'm just so confused about what to feel like this weekend. And that's the question we're going to ask, along with rating the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, talking about all the major happenings, and of course, our favorite moment of the race, which beforehand, I can tell you already, is the synchronized spin between Mr. Mick Schumacher and Nicholas Latifi. But that's all the stuff that's going to be a part of this episode. Before that, though, I think we must introduce the podcast. This is actually not the Sebastian Vettel Relief Club podcast, if you didn't quite get it. This is the Inside Line F1 podcast. This is our Abu Dhabi GP review. And my name is Somal Arora. Joining me, as always, will be F1 Stats Guru Sundaram and Kunal Shah, the former marketing head of the Force India F1 team, who now works as an FIA-accredited Formula One journalist for the Viaplay network. And first up, Kunal, the question that I asked, how are you feeling? Now, what are we supposed to feel? Are we supposed to feel sad that Sebastian Vettel has seen his career get over? Or are we supposed to feel excited that there is some sort of a break? Are we supposed to feel excited for DTS coming? Or are we supposed to feel sad that, well, we no longer get to see Mercedes challenging Red Bull Racing for the next, what, 5 odd months? It's such a confusing time. Or are we just really excited to see Max Verstappen not dominate because he's been winning so much?
Hi, guys. Thank you for that introduction. And you said Mercedes not challenge Red Bull Racing for the next 5 months. So you are technically implying that in the start of 2023, Mercedes is not going to challenge. It's going to be only a few weeks, a few races into 2023 because we are 3 months away from the first laps that will be in preseason testing or shakedown or whatever they call it. But in all seriousness, you know, what are we supposed to feel? And I don't know. I feel a void, even though I know I'm winning back a lot of weekends of my life. They're going to be free. But the void that I feel is not so much so about the on-track stuff. I think we've had a very intense season in terms of all the racing that we've seen, all the arguments, all the trolls, all the debates, discussions, and narratives shared. But like the void I feel, and I was discussing this with Mithila last evening, is what is Daniel Ricciardo going to do? And I don't mean in 2023 with Red Bull. I mean in the off-season, what is Mick Schumacher going to do? What is, you know, what is Leclerc going to do? What is Ferrari going to do? I mean, if Ferrari come out and win the next 10 races in 2023, it's because of the work that they've done as a team after Abu Dhabi 2022, right? So we've built up all these characters. We've sort of narrated their stories, their ups and downs and all of that. And then suddenly it's like somebody's gone and pulled the plug off the TV and like, boom. There's nothing that you can do about it. There will be some rumors on social media and the likes and some updates. But my point is, you know, we've built this whole crescendo over 22 races. And then suddenly there's nothing that we will know of till we straight away go to the first and only preseason test in February. And you're like, yeah, Ferrari looks quick again. And then it's like a same repeat of a story. And and Mithila had something very interesting to say. She's like, isn't this the same with a sitcom? Like Friends, you know, they release 10 episodes and then they're gone. And then they come back next year with 10 episodes. And my point to that is, you know, those are fictitious characters for which scripts are written. And what we deal with are live stories and real life people in the paddock over so many days and sessions. And this is where the ratings of our episode drop because I'm getting very philosophical. My point is I'm feeling a void. I don't know about you guys.
It should happen in a way. It's kind of like blocking off the internet. I think that's a very good analogy you made over there because every now and then we just need to switch off a little bit. I think that time has really arrived. But Sundaram, in terms of switching off, it feels so odd to see Sebastian Vettel not there anymore from next year. Of course, it doesn't feel as big right now because obviously we just saw him yesterday, right? So no big deal. We still have him very fresh in our memory. But I want to talk about that for a second because now what will you remember Sebastian Vettel for? The four-time world champion or the better person?
That's a very interesting point. And, you know, the fact is that it really hit me after the race was over and when we saw Sebastian doing the donuts on the main straight. That's when it actually really hit me that Sebastian Vettel is not going to be on the grid next year. And these were the exact same thoughts that I was reflecting upon. I'm really going to miss this guy who was, you know, at his best during his Red Bull days and the sort of personality that he had transformed himself into during his Ferrari and Aston Martin days. And I was just literally smiling at the screen and I was really reminiscing all those memories of Vettel. And the fact is, I think we all will really miss Sebastian Vettel next year. The sort of, you know, farewell that he had throughout the weekend, you know, the dinner and the track run and all the farewells that they had, that he had with the rest of the paddock. I've really not seen anyone else be celebrated so much, any other champion be celebrated so much. And you know, Michael Schumacher's won 7 titles. And that's really, really wholesome and really nice to see that Sebastian Vettel really got this sort of a send-off.
Well, one question, Kunal. I think maybe next year we should sell off an idea to the Abu Dhabi GP organizers and make sure that we get Krispy Kreme or Dunkin' Donuts or something like that to sponsor the race. Because seriously, this was Donut City all around. Like, this race is just remembered only for that, Sundaram.
You know, I'm going to actually raise a petition to bring back Brazil as the season finale, please. I know it's going to fall on deaf ears, but I would like to see Brazil as the season finale. You know, an action-packed race, lots of overtake, lots of battles to see. I wouldn't really want to see Abu Dhabi as a season-ending race, but I don't think so that's going to happen.
Yeah, it feels even more dull to end with Abu Dhabi. But seriously, Kunal, designated donut areas, what are they? Why are they? What are they for? It's just the weirdest thing I can possibly think of.
I'm actually, just before we go to the designated donuts area, you know, the Sebastian Vettel dinner that the GPDA had was the first time in 2022 that all 20 drivers actually were together at a social event, apart from when they were all together after the missile strike that happened in Saudi Arabia, right? But I'm going to keep harping on that missile strike because F1 wants us to forget that there was a missile strike. Saudi Arabia wants us to forget it, but I'm not going to forget it. But anyway, yeah. So they were all together because the preseason test, Daniel Ricciardo was not there. And then the first race when they did the class of 2022, Sebastian Vettel was not there and Nico Hülkenberg was there, right? So that was the first time that all 20 drivers were together in 2022. And then they realized exactly what you said, Sommel, that they gave such a good send-off to Sebastian Vettel that they realized, oh my God, there's, you know, we need to say see you later to Daniel, Nicholas and Mick. So they met the next time, the next evening. But maybe they should make a ritual out of this because it was such, like Sundaram said, you know, wholesome content, very soulful. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda was like, I loved the dinner. I don't know who paid for it, you know, as candid as he's always been. There were rumors about the bills that got leaked on socials and Lewis initiated it and Lewis took the tab for it or whatever. But the fact is, it was so lovely to see all of them do that. And maybe they should just make a ritual out of it. And the next time they do that, we should sneak in and put a mic in there somewhere just to hear what is it that these guys talk about when they get together. I mean, do they talk about what we think they talk about, which is something we can actually do as an episode in the off season? What do 20 drivers talk about over dinner when they meet? Maybe that's an idea for the off season. But coming to your question, designated donut areas, I think it is the first time that Formula One or the FIA has made those, right? I believe that they've been made just because they want to be very particular about where donuts are done and not anywhere and everywhere. But I don't know if these were circulated to all the drivers because Mick Schumacher and Daniel Ricciardo were actually doing donuts in another area, right? So I don't know if they will get a reprimand for that or what or not. But donuts were welcome, I would say. Mick being told off to do donuts was a bit surprising. But what does tend to happen is the teams are still going to drive in the post-season tests starting tomorrow. So they need to look after the car, they need to look after the gearbox, and they need to look after the engine. When you do donuts, the cars are not, or the equipment is not designed to do donuts. You're stuck in one gear, you're revving the engine, and so on, right? So it's not the most natural way to drive a Formula One car without damaging it. So that could be one of the reasons why they told Mick to not do donuts. But it right now just seems that, you know, Mick could just go say hi, and they'll tell Mick, no, Mick, you're not supposed to say hi here. You're supposed to say hi or whatever, you know. So it's just one of those things in the Haas Steiner and the Schumacher partnership. But yeah, so designated donuts. I quite like the donuts. I like that they had a parking spot for Vettel. Will he be missed? I think yes, he will be missed. But will he be back? You know, Lewis thinks for certain he's going to come back. And I get a feeling if a competitive drive comes his way, he's probably going to be back. That's the feeling I got. I mean, the last five races, he's been on fire, literally.
Are you just saying this to make sure that we don't feel as bad, Kunal? Really? Because at this moment, we just need something to make sure that our grief is somewhat lightened down. And knowing the fact that, oh, he could come back someday just makes it feel lighter. But I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to happen. But seriously, a word on the FIA and the designated donut areas. It's like pre-planning someone doing a sick move in a party and telling them that this is exactly where you have to do it. That just takes away the whole fun of a party. What's the point? I mean, it's not like your pets, unfortunately, just littering around over the entire living room, right? These are donuts. They don't... Sure, you can scrape them off. I just made it sound more like... pet waste rather than donuts in the track. But the point is, you can just let it happen for the moment to feel special. This just feel more coordinated and felt more mechanical, Sundaram. I don't know. Just didn't carry that same weightage as any of the previous donut moments before. Maybe just that we've gotten used to drivers doing donuts now that we need a new celebration. Maybe a 3-point turn or something to celebrate a retirement.
That's a very good point. But I think, yeah, like you mentioned, it feels best and it feels nice when it's natural and you really don't have to allot someone a designated area. But that one thing that you did mention is coordinated. And I want to talk about coordinated donuts and to top it off, a moonwalk as well. That's something that I was very, very impressed to see. And I'm sure maybe there was some sort of an agreement between Mick Schumacher and Nicholas Latifi saying that, hey, even we are not going to be on the grid next year. So the moment I tap you, the moment I nudge you on track, spin. And he did that. And there was a very nice little moonwalk towards the end of it. And if you've probably not caught it, I would recommend that you probably find that video again, put it to half speed, and really enjoy how that spin really happens.
How amazing is it, Kunal, that the last memory that we have of Nicholas Latifi in Formula One is a crash?
Well, you know, I must say, whoever has been training him about handling media has been doing a really good job, because he's been very honest. He's been saying, you know, this is a performance sport and I have not performed. I had 3 years with Williams, but I had my worst year in the third year. And, you know, he's been honest in saying, Alex Albon can drive a much more unpredictable car than I did. And George Russell, definitely more talented than I have ever been, and so on. So it's, you know, it's refreshing. Unlike some of the other pay drivers whose fathers actually own teams, turn around and just blame the car, blame the team, blame the teammate, whoever, and move on. So it's been refreshing to see what Nicholas Latifi he's been saying. And, you know, he, of course, qualified 20th and dead last for, I think, the 8th time this season. So, in a way, I'm just sort of glad that he's sort of, you know, bowing out of Formula One. Just shows not everybody who steps up is ready, is able to take the challenge or take the step up into Formula One and keep performing. And Logan Sargeant, I mean, you know, he needed to have a clean weekend in Abu Dhabi to get his super license points. He did. It's a bit of a strange thing that the winner of the 2022 Formula 2 Championship, Felipe Drogovic, who, by the way, has been driving that MP Motorsport car fantastically well, because if you compare him to Clement Novalak, his teammate is not even, I think he's 14th in the Drivers' Championship, right? But Drogovic has no clue when he's going to drive in Formula One. And he's Brazilian, a very key Formula One market. But Logan Sargeant, who, you know, I think he was fourth in the Drivers' Championship in the end, if I recollect. you know, has a confirmed seat because, hey, it's American and we need to get an American driver in the team. So, yeah, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just stating a fact. And that's just the, how the business of motorsport and Formula One has been running all these years.
You know, one very interesting fact is that in the last 30 years, we've had only just one full season where an American driver has raced. I think that was 2006. But in the last 30 to 32 years, we've really not had one full season with an American driver. And I think 2023 is finally going to be that time when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure, it's great for Formula One that we get to see an American driver. But someone who's finishing fourth in Formula Two, really, is that how it works? And that's also not been one of the best years in terms of Formula Two talents, because in 2018, we saw Albon, we saw Russell, and we saw Lando Norris all graduate from the same class. And that's when even the third best driver in, let's say, Alexander Albon, you can see some sure quality in it. But I don't know, with Logan Sargeant, it's interesting what's happening. All I can say is that, is he really going to be an upgrade on Nicholas Latifi is going to be a major question. From what we've seen so far, it's hard to really tell. Of course, he won't crash as much, but yeah, it's absurd how things are going on. But on a lighter note, isn't Logan Sargeant the most American name in the world, Kunal? Like, if you hear Logan Sargeant, you can't be doubtful that this guy is not from the US. Like, it's proper American moment, isn't it?
It's actually, it is the most American moment. I actually love the last name, I must say. And for all those listening to us from the southern part of India, you know, Sar, which is going to be S-A-R, his initials, is a very, very local way of saying Sir. You know, it's just how it sounds. So they do mean S-I-R, but it just sounds like S-A-R, which is what his initials will be. I'm excited to see what's the car number he's going to have. But I am eager, I mean, you know, to see how well he does, how he steps up, whether it's a Latifi or a Russell or whatever he's going to do. I am eager to see how he steps up. And I quite like the fact that there are other teams coming to Williams's assistance here. I mean, Alpine has turned around and said, you know, we'd love to give him a ride in our TPC car, which is a 2021 car. Of course, Alpine is going to charge Williams some money for it. But he's, you know, so Logan Sargeant is just going to get some more miles under his belt. And, you know, we got one new driver next season.
Actually, not just one, no. Two, because Nyck de Vries, he got literally shipped off and delivered to AlphaTauri. I think we need to do this sort of ritual every single time, right? Whenever a driver changes a team, after they're done celebrating, ship them off in one of those little transporter things. I don't know what the exact term for them is. Strap them up and lay them down in the garage of the next team. I think that's something that needs to be a ritual that we need to see every single time. But if that were to happen, where would you lay off Daniel Ricciardo or Nicholas Latifi or Mick Schumacher in that case?
I absolutely don't know. But what happened yesterday was a very nice thing that we saw. It's something that we've never seen before. Very innovative, I would say, that Mercedes ended up doing. And it was quite quick also after the race had ended. And they also dropped him in the marina, I suppose. So there's a very interesting thing that I saw on social media that whenever someone changes teams from Mercedes, they always have to take a dip in the marina. But yeah, pretty interesting scenes yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. And now, for a second, I want to talk about Sergio Perez, because we're so far into this episode that we haven't talked about the P2 battle now. Anticlimactic, I think, is the word that we're going to use for it, isn't it, Kunal? Because the way it started off, it seemed like there was a genuine chance that Perez could make it a Red Bull 1-2 for the first time ever. But then degradation came in the way. Just how disappointing was that be in the broader scheme of things? Because Red Bull all year round have appeared in the best car.
I disagree that it was degradation that came in the way. I would say that it was Max Verstappen who did not come in the way of Charles Leclerc, could have actually.
I meant teammate relation degradation, not tires.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Then that's... But I think, you know, Perez knows he doesn't really have a chance elsewhere just yet. Just yet. Okay. So he's got to stick with whatever Red Bull stick him with, I would say. Right? But the key question is, Max Verstappen said post-race, it wouldn't have been fair racing to, it wouldn't have been fair racing to block Leclerc on track and slow him down, right? The most interesting thing here is he forgets that last year he called Checo a legend for doing exactly that, for slowing Lewis Hamilton down. I mean, Lewis Hamilton called it dangerous racing, but you could see how Mark Checo was driving slowly in the third sector of the Yas Marina circuit just so that Max could catch up. And then that took away some strategy options from Lewis Hamilton under the safety car and so on. Could they have done that? Should they have done that? It's the question. But the truth is, this was the best effort basis from Red Bull, from Max, from Checo. And I'm just glad that they didn't do something more farcical like, okay, Max need to give up the win for Checo Perez, because Max with 15 wins in the season is far more a stat you'll remember than, hey, Red Bull got their first 1-2 in their championship. I mean, they're still a champion team despite not having a 1-2 before. So why are we suddenly wanting a 1-2 this time, right? But talking of Max's 15 wins, he scored 15 wins in one season, whereas Jenson Button scored 15 wins over his entire Formula One career. Just to keep that in perspective.
Oh, you didn't have to kill off my championship heroes or my childhood heroes' career like that one. Yikes. But remarkable how disappointing the season has been in terms of a competition perspective and how it actually played out. But that's on the championship front. Down below, Sundaram, there was this amazing little battle that we all really forgot that eventually played out between Aston Martin and Alfa Romeo. And at the very end, they're now tied for P6 with 55 points. But Alfa Romeo, I think for the first time in forever, have finished above someplace like P8 because they finally gotten P6 in the championship. In terms of trajectory, it's hard to see them climbing back up because the team that they're fighting against, Aston Martin, have just had a remarkable resurgence in points. But regardless, from where they were last year to get to here, it's just frankly fantastic. Even Haas getting to P8, it's like the stories of last year, all the disappointments have been reversed for all teams barring Williams, that is.
Yeah, good point. Because we would always see a team like a Toro Rosso or an Alfa Tauri being there in P6 or P7, and they've actually dropped down to P9 this year, which is very, very astonishing. And a team like Haas finishing P8, and then Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin. I mean, in fact, Aston Martin were in ninth after the summer break, and over the last, I would say, 10 races or so, they've accumulated close to 35 points, whereas Alfa Romeo have taken just 4 points in the last 10-12 races. So an incredible resurgence to take to be equal on sixth with Alfa Romeo, which makes things very interesting for next year as well.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. But now with Fernando Alonso coming in there, I think the whole mixture is going to be even crazier. We've been constantly talking about it on the podcast, right? For how long can Fernando Alonso keep up the charade of being a nice guy and being a good teammate? At Alpine, we saw that happen for, 1 year and 1.9 years, you could put it that way. It only started to go off with his best friend in the last couple of races. But now, Kunal, he has to suck up to the owner's son. Not suck up to him, but at least not pull up a conflict with him. That, I think, is going to be the biggest story to watch for the course of the next couple of years. Apart from, of course, Alonso looking to kind of fight with the entire world, which is just persistent at this point.
I think I would reverse the question. Will the Strolls risk upsetting Fernando Alonso? I mean, that guy is in so much of a fire, right, that you don't want to take him head on. And I think Lance Stroll, of all the people, Vettel is a very easygoing, very likable, very friendly character, you know, fighting over one point or not. But I don't think Alonso will be such a little walkover. And it's unfortunate that, you know, Alpine, of course, got P4, but Fernando Alonso had his sixth retirement of the year, sixth DNF or something. And he's, of course, he pointed out in Australia and some of the other races, he had issues even going into qualifying. And then he asked a very important question. How is it that it was just my car facing all the challenges? And despite all these challenges, he was 10 or 12 points, maybe less than 10 points away from Esteban Ocon in the championship. So a fantastic season overall for Alonso. And, you know, if he keeps continuing with these results, who's to say that he's going to stop anytime soon? I mean, I would love to just see him drive and drive and drive, because it's a delight to watch him drive, I would say. And, you know, another delight, and I'm going to move on now from Alonso in Abu Dhabi, was Ferrari's pit stop strategy for Charles Leclerc. They knew that they had to beat Perez on strategy. They knew they had to make the one stop work. They knew they had to get Perez to make a second stop and all of that. They called a dummy, they made Perez pit, and they sort of made it work for Charles Leclerc, which is fantastic. The funny part is they have gone on and on in every media interview how they nailed the strategy to perfection, how they called a dummy and they fooled Red Bull and Perez, right? And the truth is, yes, they wanted to use the races towards the latter half of 22 in sharpening their strategy and operational skills and so on. They've finally done that, but it's taken them some time. Other teams do this time and time again, just that they don't really end up talking too much about it, if I may put it that way. But, you know, credit where it's due. I think it's, if that's what drives Ferrari up, you know, public motivation and the media saying good things and telling people like Red Bull and Hannah Schmitz and the team saying, haha, hey, you know, for once I fooled you. If that's what drives them, why not?
You know, something that really caught my eye in the press conferences and even the interviews after the race is Charles Leclerc and Mattia Binotto time and time mentioning that they finally got their time management right this time and they had the pace, which is something that I don't really remember when was the last time they mentioned, because after the new technical directive came in Belgium, they've always had some trouble when it came to tire degradation. And yesterday, they finally say, oh, the tire management's been great. So that's something that was lesser heard in the last several races.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I was actually very intrigued to see that happening all the way through. And for once, Ferrari actually being on the upper hand. But this just again raises another question about the car philosophies and designs, right? Because now that Ferrari have some glimmer of hope in the last race, will they sort of continue with the same concept? At this point, of course, most people have decided what they're going to do. But I think this question is better yet asked for Mercedes, who now have at least one win in their bag. Shame for Lewis Hamilton that his undertaker-like streak has been broken down. But sure enough, they have won a race. They are seeing some sort of progress with the car. We saw that one big spike in Brazil and it's back down once again in Abu Dhabi. So this is big confusion, right, Kunal? At least or so it may seem for us. Just where does Mercedes go for 2023? What sort of concept do they apply? And what happens next? Because this for them is the most uncharacteristic year. But in terms of human personality, sort of, we can see that they've pushed way beyond anything else. They've had amazing results. And from where they were, surely they've come ahead. But just what happened in Abu Dhabi that really curtailed them so far?
I think I'm going to summarize what Lewis Hamilton said. He said that they started the year with a car they didn't want and they ended the year with a car they didn't want. And, you know, at the end of the day, no win this season, no pole position for the first time in his career as well. They had porpoising back bothering them in Abu Dhabi as well. So it was just general Mercedes performance that you didn't see in the Americas. Maybe they just perform well in the American time zone. I mean, you know, that's what the Austin upgrade did to them. So it was just down to that. And F1 Stats Guru put up a very interesting stat on our chat board right now, saying in the 2022 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, and Sebastian Vettel retired. Of course, you got to understand the meaning of that message, but that was a very interesting stat. But yes, coming to Mercedes, Toto Wolff, you know, we're going to bounce back. We're going to fight at the front. He's trying to say that to, of course, Warren Red Bull. Lewis Hamilton said at the start of the year, you've not seen the best part of me yet. So that's what we were hoping to see in 2022 as well. But again, like I said at the start of the show, so many narratives. How are we going to keep following it? We'd love to do that, right? Because suddenly, you know, in February, when you see people, you will see a different side to them. And you're like, hey, what happened to you? You know, when we saw you on the 20th of November, this was a little different or that was a little different. But that's just how it goes in Formula One.
And I love the question that you asked about it, Kunal. How are we going to follow it all along? What are we going to do in the meantime? And luckily for that, we've got tons of interesting content coming up on the Inside Line F1 podcast, starting off with our end of season awards. So we're going to have a big review that we record in person, which means that we're able to do more banter in there as well. And we kind of rate out the most, let's say, non-obvious award categories for the entire year. That sort of banter parody awards happens in a week's time. So that'll be incredible fun as well. But then over the winter, we're going to have special episodes and special interviews also coming about. So stay tuned on the Inside Line F1 podcast for that. The season might be over, but the fun is not over yet. So subscribe to us on all of our platforms or whichever platform that you listen to the Insideline F1 podcast on. And to interact with us over the winter on social media, you can check out the links in our description. But now, folks, it's time to head back in our cave for one day and cry about Sebastian Vettel's retirement and then simp over the new winter test once again. Bye, folks. Have a good time. Enjoy the weekend. Bye-bye.